Welcome to The Word for Today, the broadcast ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing our study of Ezra with The Proclamation of Cyrus, as we pick up once again in Ezra, chapter 1, verse 1. And now, here's Pastor Chuck Smith with today's lesson.
Cyrus, the king of Persia, in order that the word of the Lord by Jeremiah, the mouth of Jeremiah, might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, and he made this proclamation. Thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. And who is there among you of all of his people, his God be with him, let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of Jehovah God of Israel, for he is God. And whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with silver, with gold, with goods, and with animals, beside the freewill offerings for the house of God that is in Jerusalem. So the proclamation now by Cyrus to release the people of Israel from their captivity. So coming back now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, Babylon has been conquered. In order that the word of the Lord might be fulfilled, these prophecies, he's made this decree to allow the people of Israel to return, that they might build the house. And he realizes, I've been commissioned by God. He has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. God's given me this commandment, this charge. Now, this decree made by Cyrus extended to all of Israel, not just the southern kingdom of Judah. If you will turn to chapter 2, verse 70, it says, so the priests and the Levites and some of the people and the singers and the porters and the Nethinims dwelt in their cities, and all Israel in their cities. So this repatriation was not just of Judah. But when Persia conquered the Babylonian Empire, the Babylonian Empire had already conquered the Assyrian Empire. And so Persia, as Cyrus said, I rule all the kingdoms of the world. And so his decree was not limited to just Judah, but it was a decree that extended to all of Israel. So that those who returned from the captivity were people from all of the tribes of Israel. And I was starting to say 12 tribes, but you know better than that. You know there are 13. Levi was usually not counted as a tribe, and the tribe of Joseph was divided into two, Ephraim and Manasseh. So there were 12 sons of Jacob, but the one son, Joseph, became two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, the double portion to Joseph, and thus made 13 tribes. But whenever they are listed, they are never listed as 13 tribes. They're always listed as the 12 tribes, and you always find that there's one missing whenever you read the list. Or the tribes in Ephraim and Manasseh are combined together into the tribe of Joseph, but there's always a listing of 12. 12 is the number of human government, governmental perfection. And so the 12 apostles, the 12 tribes, and it is a biblically a significant number of government, human government. And thus, the tribes are all included at this point of history. So there are not 10 lost tribes that migrated to England, and of course they have fanciful stories of Jeremiah taking one of the descendants of David and taking him into Egypt and then on to England, where he became the monarch in England, and England is the only nation that still has a monarchy, that goes way back, and God promised to David there should never cease one of his seed to be sitting upon the throne, and thus the king of England is a part of the seed of David, etc., ad nauseam. So the decree went forth, verse 5, then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priest, and the Levites, all of them whose spirit God had raised up to go and build the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem. And all they were about them strengthened their hands, those that were about them, the people, their friends, their relatives, strengthened their hands. And they gave them vessels of silver with gold and goods. They gave them the beast and the precious things beside all that they willingly offered. And Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels that had been taken from the house of the Lord, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem to put them in the house of Merodach, his god. And even those did Cyrus the king of Persia bring forth by the hand of Mithridath, the treasurer, and he numbered them unto Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. And this is the number of them. There were 30 chargers of gold, 1,000 chargers of silver, and 29 knives, 30 basins of gold, silver basins of a second sort, 410, and other vessels, 1,000. And all of the vessels of gold and silver were 5,400. And all of these did Sheshbazzar bring up with them of the captivity, and he brought them from Babylon to Jerusalem. So this group now begins to gather together the treasures, the wealth, to go back to begin to rebuild the temple that is in Jerusalem. Now, these are the children of the province, chapter 2, that went up out of captivity of those which had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away unto Babylon. And they came again unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one unto his city. And first of all, in verse 2, we have a listing of the leaders. And notice the first two leaders, Zerubbabel. He was one of the sort of headmen, and Joshua was the high priest, the chief priest. You will read again of Zerubbabel in Nehemiah, and then if you would, for your own benefit, for extra credit, read Zechariah this week. You'll find that Joshua and Zerubbabel, they have a very important place in the prophecy of Zechariah. The prophet Zechariah was writing at this time. Also read Haggai. That's easy. Only a couple of chapters in Haggai. And read Haggai and read Zechariah. And knowing what's going on here will give you a better understanding of these prophets if you would read them in conjunction with Ezra and Nehemiah. In verses 3 to verse 19, you have the naming of the various family heads. These are the various families that came back and the numbers from that particular family. Beginning with verse 20 to verse 35, You have the listings of the cities, the people from these various cities that return, the numbers of people. Verse 36 to 39, you have a listing of the priest. And then beginning with verse 40, the listing of the Levites. And that goes to verse 54, and beginning with verse 55, you have the servants of Solomon, the children of Solomon's servants, and the names of the servants of Solomon and their children. And then again in verse 61, you have the children of the priest and the various families of the priest that came back. Now in verse 62, you have something interesting. This last grouping in verse 61, they sought through the genealogies to find their pedigree of sorts, but they could not and they did not have a good genealogy. And so their search was made and their names were not found. They could not prove that they were of the priesthood. Therefore, they were considered as unclean, not able to serve in the priesthood. And the Tirshatha, who was Zerubbabel, said unto them that they should not eat of the most holy things until there stood up a priest with the Urim and the Thummim. Back when God first established the priesthood under the law of Moses, a part of the priest vestment was the Urim and the Thummim, of which we know very little. The words in Hebrew mean lights and perfections. All we know is that somehow they used the Urim and the Thummim to determine the will of God. The Urim and the Thummim were worn by the priest as a part of his vestments, and through these they would inquire of the will of the Lord. There have been various suggestions offered as to what the Urim and the Thummim were, but we really don't know. All they are is suggestions and conjecture. The Bible doesn't really tell us. But leave it to Joe Smith to tell you what the Bible doesn't tell you. For he tells us that the Urim and the Thummim were a pair of glasses that he discovered with the golden tablets. And they were magic glasses because when he put these glasses on that he found with the golden tablets, the glasses which were the Urim and the Thummim, he could then read the hieroglyphics of these golden tablets. So that's Joe's interpretation. I don't put much stock in it. But they were divining instruments by which they would determine the will of the Lord. And throughout the Old Testament period, up until this period, they would go to the priest to inquire of the Lord up until about the period of the prophets. And then they would go to the prophet to inquire the will of the Lord. Now, Zerubbabel, when these fellows say they are of the priesthood, because they could not produce genealogies that proved it, they were not allowed to enter into the priesthood until he said, you know, we've established the whole thing. We have a high priest with the Urim and the Thummim in which we might inquire from the Lord to find out if these men are true or not. There is no record or indication that the priesthood ever again did use the Urim and the Thummim for the discerning of the will of God. It would seem from the silence that it never did develop again as a method or means of discerning God's will. I think it's quite interesting that in the New Testament, when the disciples sought to discern God's will, concerning the choice of one to take the place of Judas Iscariot to bring their number back up to 12. And they chose Matthias and Barsabbas. And then in order to discern God's will between these two fellows, they cast lots, or sort of drew straws. That's an interesting way of finding God's will, is drawing straws. I think, though, that they made a real mistake. And I think that often we do make a mistake when we limit God to just two choices. God, which of the two shall it be? Well, it turned out it wasn't either of the two. And we often make a mistake when we say, well, God, shall I do this or that? Come on, let's be fair. Let's leave it totally open. God, what do you want me to do? We limit it to two. We say, well, I've got this or that. But God has alternatives that we haven't even thought about. And it's important that we leave it totally open to the Lord. Lord, just guide me. And, of course, the Lord later chose Paul as an apostle by the will of God. So these fellows were not allowed actively in the priesthood because of their inability to produce their genealogy. So the whole congregation who returned was 42,660, plus their servants. And according to a apocryphal book of Esdras, they did not number the children under the age of 12. So there was possibly as many as 60,000 or so that returned, because they did. And of course, there were the servants with their maids, who were 7,337. And among them, they had 200 singing men and singing women, the choirs. Now, he even gives you the number of their horses, if you're interested. 736. 245 mules. Now, if you divide that into the number of people, that means they didn't really have that many horses, that many mules. Camels, 435, means about every hundredth man had a camel. Donkeys, of course, which were the main beast of burden, they had 6,720. And some of the chief fathers, when they came to the house of the Lord, which was at Jerusalem, offered freely for the house of God to set it up in its place. In other words, as they came back, they gave, according to their ability, unto the treasure of the work, 61,000 drams of gold, 5,000 pounds of silver, or 5,000 pound of silver. It isn't equal to our pound. And 100 priest garments. So the priests and the Levites and some of the people and the singers and the porters and the Nethinims dwelt in their cities, and all of Israel in their cities. They didn't all come back to Jerusalem. A segment did. Now, when the seventh month was come, this is the month of religious celebration. This is the month in which they had Yom Kippur, the month in which they celebrated the Feast of the Tabernacles. The children of Israel were in the cities, and the people gathered themselves, according to the law, to Jerusalem as one man, as keeping the law, gathering to worship. And then Joshua, the son of Josedech, and his brothers the priest, and Zerubbabel, and Shealtiel, and his brethren, they built the altar of God of Israel to offer the burnt offerings thereon, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar upon the bases. The original foundation stones were still there. So on these foundation stones, they built a new altar in order that they might offer sacrifices thereon. For fear was upon them because of the people of those countries, and they offered burnt offerings thereon unto the Lord, even burnt offerings morning and evening. So they began the morning and the evening sacrifices. The people that had moved into the land during this 70-year period were hostile to them when they returned. And they were actually outnumbered by these people. And these people began to seek to hinder their work, as we will find out as we move along in Ezra. They also kept the Feast of the Tabernacles, as it is written. And they offered the daily burnt offerings by number, according to the custom as the duty of every day required. And afterward, they offered the continual burnt offering, both of the new moons, all of the set feasts of the Lord that were consecrated, and everyone that willingly offered a freewill offering unto the Lord. And from the first day of the seventh month, they began to offer burnt offerings unto the Lord. But the foundations of the temple were not yet laid. They just set up the altar so that they could offer the sacrifices there in the court of the temple, and they had not yet begun the rebuilding of the temple.
We'll return with more of our study of Ezra in our next lesson, as Pastor Chuck Smith continues with the removal of the undocumented priests. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of Ezra. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
May the Lord give you a great week, watching over you, filling you with His love, guiding you according to His plan. May you experience the work of the Spirit within your heart, deepening your commitment unto Jesus Christ, causing you to have a true perspective of life, helping you to discern between that which is temporal and that which is eternal in order that you might give yourself over to the things that really count. And thus may God's hand be upon you to guide and to keep and to make it a blessed week for you as you commit yourself to following Jesus Christ.
There is always an ever-present danger for Christians of being beguiled. That word reminds me of Eve. She had everything in the garden. She had fellowship with God. She had her husband all to herself, no competition whatsoever. And yet the serpent came to her.
The Word for Today is pleased to present Kay Smith's newest edition in her Bible study series for women, the Book of Colossians. Come alongside Kay as she exhorts women and teaches what the Bible says about these last days. Women will discover how to discern spiritual deception and comprehend correct biblical doctrine that leads to a renewed eternal perspective.
How grateful we are to you, Father, for how you teach us in your word to beware of the beguilers, how you warn us, how you help us, how you encourage us.
To order a copy for yourself or a friend, please call The Word for Today at 1-800-272-9673, or to see a sneak preview, visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.